It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss how younger generations take on the climate crisis as they bear witness to the suffering that is going on in their homelands. Call in about climate action, what you see from the movement among young people, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Ashley Lashley here, became a UNICEF youth advocate last year representing the island country Barbados. She leads her own foundation, raising awareness about social, environmental, and health issues, particularly in small island developing states. Ashley, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good morning. And we also have Evelyn Acham, who is a climate justice activist from Uganda, where she's a national coordinator for the Rise Up movement, working to advance gender equity and justice in education, health, and economics. Evelyn, welcome to you.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm very happy to be here on the show, and thank you so much for having me.
Yes, Evelyn, let's start with you. You were at COP27, the United Nations Climate Conference in Egypt last month. Was enough accomplished by the conference?
Well, the conference, we just have to celebrate the wins that we get. Of course, we are not yet there. We haven't yet achieved everything that we are demanding for, but the conference ended by adding the loss and damage on the agenda, but we still have more work to do. We need a facility set up for loss and damage. For your information, those who do not understand what loss and damage is, loss and damage is the devastating disasters that climate change is causing to nations like mine, like floods that are destroying people's property, people's a lot of infrastructure, and leading people to a point of not being able to adapt to the impacts of climate change. So we are demanding this facility to provide reparations for people so that people are able to recover from this crisis. So this is what we've been demanding for the whole of last year. And I'm happy to say that at the end of COP27, the loss and damage was able to be added to the agenda. Mm-hmm. We want to see that this facility is set up and actually implemented and not just stop at promises, pledges. So this is going to be our focus this year to make sure that a facility for loss and damage is set up.
And we're going to talk more about the loss and damage fund in a moment, but I want to bring in Ashley. You are one of many young activists from around the world that is drawing attention to the effects of climate change. Are world leaders listening to your concerns?
Well, thank you firstly for asking this question. I honestly believe that with the movement as it relates to young persons bringing awareness to climate change and the impact of climate justice, we are getting the necessary attention publicly, but our world leaders aren't really listening to us, and the time for action, they're taking too long to act on stuff like my colleague mentioned, the loss and damage fund, which was achieved at COP27, but we still need to see the implementation. We saw the flooding in Pakistan where hundreds of persons lost their lives. Here in the Caribbean, where I'm from, we're seeing that even in my own island, Barbados, that we're experiencing stuff like coastal erosion. Back in 2016, one of the Caribbean islands, Dominica, lost approximately 280% of their gross domestic product. So more needs to be done, to be honest, from world leaders as it relates to ensuring that developing nations really get the necessary support that we require to adapt and mitigate better to the impact of the climate crisis.
Ashley Lashley there from Barbados. We have Evelyn Acham from Uganda as we hear from voices around the world about climate change. Let's bring on Mitzi Jonelle Tan, who is the international spokesperson of Youth Advocates for Climate Action Philippines and the Fridays for Future of the Philippines. Mitzi, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. We've been just bringing up the loss and damage fund. Evelyn was talking about it in COP27. Wealthier nations with high carbon emissions agreed to help vulnerable developing countries deal with the impacts. Are you confident that wealthy nations will follow through with these financial commitments?
From what we've been seeing with previous climate finance, they haven't been delivering, not for adaptation and mitigation. And now we're worried that they're not going to be doing this for the loss and damage finance facility either. And that is why people across the globe, not just young people and not just people from the climate movement, but really every single person needs to be on board and putting pressure on world leaders to ensure that money flows from the global north to the global south as a form of reparations, which means it has to be in the form of grants and not loans. And we have to make sure that this financing is new and not reallocated. Otherwise, it will never be enough for the people in the global south, in the Philippines, who are already experiencing the worst impacts of the climate crisis.
Can you tell us more about the impact to the Philippines? How is climate change affecting your country?
The Philippines has had the highest number of extreme weather events in the past 20 years. According to the latest study of the German Climate Risk Index, we're the country that's most at risk for climate impacts. Our country barely contributes to the climate crisis with less than 0.4% of carbon dioxide emissions. Yet, year after year, we experience typhoon after typhoon, drought after drought, sea level rising faster than the global average. This means that people, young people like me, grew up being afraid of drowning in our own bedroom. It means that whenever there's a warning of a storm signal, we fear for our lives, for our families, for our community. That is what the climate crisis looks like. It's people across the world being afraid of not being able to survive because of a crisis that we did not cause.
Ashley, what about like hurricanes Harvey and Maria and Irma? What has been the impact on small island developing nations?
Well, I think even like growing up, small island developing nations, we've been here, islands like the Maldives and the Seychelles really advocating that they need more support as it relates to adapting to the impact of the climate crisis. As sea level continue to rise, persons living in small island developing states will eventually have to migrate as a result. And here in the Caribbean, when we get extreme weather events such as hurricanes, up to last year, my island Barbados experienced its first hurricane in over 65 years. When these disasters continues to intensify and destroy many homes, then it puts our basic needs and necessities at risk. And what we're also finding is that it has an impact on persons' mental health. I started a movement called the Hay Campaign, which stands for Healthy and Environmentally Friendly Youth. And it looks at the impact that climate change is having on not only persons' physical health, but their mental health. And I remembered one of our Hay ambassadors last year. She was actually from Dominica. And she was highlighting to us that after Hurricane Maria completely destroy Dominica, it had an impact on her family and her mental health. So there needs to be a greater level of support and more emphasis, to be honest, not only from governments, but from the private sector and civil society, to really bring about the necessary sensitization and awareness that the impact of the climate crisis is interconnected to so many social issues, and more support needs to be done. Each and every person, as Mitzi said, has a very important role to play to really help us to survive the devastating effects of the climate crisis that we're not only seeing in SIDS, but that we're seeing globally as well.
Ashley Lashley there from Barbados, as we're in conversation with a new generation of climate activists. We have Mitzi Jonelle Tan from the Philippines, Evelyn Acham from Uganda. We'll hear more about the drought situation in the Horn of Africa. Colin, about how to build on the youth climate movement, how you contribute to it, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Young people have been at the forefront of climate change discussions and activism, and we hear from several of these leaders. Join in with your thoughts about young people's work on climate policies, how they can get a seat at the table among powerful world leaders and corporations. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Ashley Lashley from Barbados, Mitzi Jonel Tan with Youth Advocates for Climate Action Philippines, and Evelyn Acham from Uganda. Evelyn, let's talk about the situation in the Horn of Africa, experiencing this historic, dire drought and starvation. Help us understand how it connects to the climate crisis.
Thank you so much. Uganda is one of the countries that are most vulnerable to climate change, and we're experiencing different disasters like prolonged droughts, and these droughts are caused by the climate change that is disrupting weather patterns. Uganda naturally experiences tropical type of climate, and we've been getting two seasons, a rainy and dry season, but because weather patterns have been disrupted, we are not seeing rain anymore. So this is instead coming in form of very long dry seasons for the whole year. So the East African affecting the whole of Africa, and this is extending to parts of Uganda like northeastern Uganda. This year, very many people died in Karamoja region. It's a district in northeastern Uganda. Hundreds of people died, and millions, almost half a million people, are still starving up to now. They don't have food to eat. Lactating mothers are dying while breastfeeding their children silently in their houses. The elderly are dying. Again, when the climate crisis happens, we need to note that it disproportionately affects people. Not everyone is being impacted the same way. There are people who are being impacted more, like women, like girls, like children. In Uganda, when climate change happens, like droughts, most times girls have to stay back home and help with house chores and help take care of their siblings, while their mothers have to go very long distances to look for food, to look for water, because the nearby water sources have dried up. So they have to go very long distances to get water that sometimes is even paid for, and they don't have this money to pay for this water. And as a result, they are also exposed to very many risks like trafficking while resting in temporary shelters. And also at the end of the day, when a girl spends a lot of months not going to school, they end up falling victims of early child marriages or being given away for marriage in exchange for bride price. There's something in that we call bride price. When a girl is getting married, usually the family or the man provides like a gift to the parents. So what some families in Uganda look at, they're looking at this bride price as the only hope that they have to survive. So they look at any girl in the family as hope to survive. So they give away this girl at a very young age, at 12 years, at 13 years for marriage, to get money to support their families. So the climate crisis, like Ashley said, is intersectional. One thing leads to another. Sometimes we're looking at problems in Uganda, and they're all related to climate change. They're being exacerbated by climate change. Climate change is exacerbating poverty. It's leading to gender inequality. It's increasing gender inequality, health inequity, exacerbating food poverty, education poverty. Like I said, children are dropping out of school. Schools are being destroyed by floods.
I just want to pause there to bring in Mitzi on the gender equity issues with what Evelyn is describing in Uganda. Mothers and girls particularly vulnerable in this crisis. Mitzi, how do you see climate change affecting women and gender equity?
As Evelyn was saying, we saw that 80% of people displaced by the climate crisis are women. Also because the climate crisis impacts economically marginalized people more, and majority of economically marginalized people are women, then that is also another layer of the climate crisis exacerbating gender injustice. But a very clear example is in 2013, in the Philippines, Typhoon Haiyan hit a region in the Philippines. And because of the economic devastation of the typhoon, for months after, young girls and women were forced into prostitution. So it really just shows you that the climate crisis isn't just about extreme weather events or the environment, but really a systemic issue at its core that impacts the people most vulnerable already. And so in order to solve and address the climate crisis, we also need to solve and address all socioeconomic crises. And it really does intersect, especially with class and gender.
Hearing from voices around the world about climate change, as we talk with Mitzi Jonel Tan there from the Philippines, we have Evelyn Acham from Uganda and Ashley Lashley from Barbados. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Ashley, what responsibility do wealthier nations have for human rights, for gender equity, for these social issues rising out of the climate crisis?
I think they have a major role to play. They have a major role to play as it relates to what we term as, what I term as environmental reparations, not only as it relates to those social issues, but also as it relates to developing nations who at the end of the day, many small island developing states only contributes 1% to the overall greenhouse gas emissions. And as my two other colleagues who are on the call, who were also speaking to the gender inequalities, as we heard, the climate crisis has an impact on so many different social sectors. So developed nations really need to look at, let's go back to the $100 billion that was committed by developed nations to developing nations. And that still hasn't been realized to date. And we're seeing that even children are being displaced as a result. Some persons have as it relates to the impact of the climate crisis, basic necessities such as health, access to adequate food and healthcare, that is compromised. And, you know, it also affects pregnant women who have to migrate as a result. So when it comes to the climate crisis, to be honest, and mitigating and adapting better, more investments needs to be put on the social and health sector, because we're already living in a world where millions of persons are living in poverty-stricken conditions. And as the climate crisis continues to get worsened, then we're going to see that the basic necessities for us as human beings to survive are being compromised daily. So they really need to look at investing more, not only in adaptation and mitigation, but the social services as a whole to ensure that we as humans and our basic necessities and our human rights are protected and not compromised.
I would imagine it's difficult, though, for small island developing states to ensure those investments get to them. You know, geography, their remote locations, you know, their impact is not as visible. What about those challenges?
Yeah, and I think that is a great question that you asked, because, you know, although today we're having a conversation of like what world leaders can do, I think it also goes back to those multilateral banks and those banks who are giving us from small island developing states loans when we're trying to mitigate and adapt better to the impact of the climate crisis. I honestly believe, as I think Mitzi alluded to this, that developed nations as well as these multilateral banks like the World Bank, the IMF, there needs to be a greater level of grant support for small island developing states and those countries within the global south to really seek to embark on a major adaptation and mitigation strategy to the impact of the climate crisis. And here in Barbados, everyone probably heard about our Prime Minister, Mia Motley. She's constantly on the global stage, advocating for a greater level of climate finance to not only Barbados, but the Caribbean nations and and island nations across small island developing states. So what we're seeing is that world leaders, our leaders from SIDS and Caribbean nations are speaking out as it relates to what is needed for us to mitigate and adapt better. But we need to see that greater level of what I call it a tripartite agreement between not only government, but private sector and civil society, all working together to ensure that at the end of the day, humanity, are we're working together to save humanity and working together to save our Earth. So there needs to be a greater level of partnerships.
And let's pause right there about the partnerships, youth climate activism, as we hear from a new generation of leaders. We'll pick this up. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss how to empower young climate activists as this year's COP27, the International Climate Talks, saw the first ever trained youth climate negotiators at the UN summit. Call in about climate change and what's possible through youth activism. 800-642-1234. We have UNICEF youth advocate Ashley Lashley of Barbados behind the Healthy and Environmentally Friendly Youth Campaign. Iblian Acham is with Rise Up Movement in Uganda, and Mitzi Jonel Tan is with Youth Advocates for Climate Action Philippines, based in Manila. Mitzi, I want to talk about anxiety for a moment, climate anxiety, and you mentioned the fear of being swept away in typhoons, in tropical storms that can happen any time of year. How are you and other activists coping with the anxiety when you contemplate the future?
I always have a hard time answering this question because I'm honestly still trying to figure out how to deal with it. And I think that's the first step in dealing with climate anxiety, is being able to talk about it, being able to admit that we, even climate activists, don't have all the answers. What works for me is being surrounded by community, being surrounded by people who understand me, who I know can hold me accountable, but also hold me in embrace. There was this one particular moment where I was really, I think it was after the release of one of the reports of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and I was really, really in the depths of my climate anxiety. And someone told me, "It's okay, Mitzi, we're gonna be doing this together. We're gonna fight for every fraction of a degree. And we're going to find a way to make sure that we achieve the climate justice world that we're fighting for." And I think holding on to that hope, really holding on to that future that we're building together, is what helps me. And also remembering that it already exists. Indigenous communities, small farmers, small fisher folk, they're already living in sustainably in balance with the world. And that's what we have to get back to, making sure that we build a world together where no one is left behind. And that's essentially all that we're fighting for.
Evelyn, how about you? The United Nations saying Africa is the most vulnerable to the effects of climate change. How are young people in Uganda coping with climate change anxiety?
In Africa, usually people get anxiety, but it's very hard to know that someone is actually suffering from this because of the complicated life or the hard life that someone has grown up in, seeing so many other disasters besides climate change. So climate change is just worsening the situation and making everything worse. So people have grown up in my country, and people have lived with anxiety for quite a long time. And how people are coping with this, most people that I've seen in Africa are fighters, and they really work very hard to make sure that they get what they are fighting for. So seeing all these activists that are rising up, because the movement is growing in Africa. It started with a few activists, and now so many people are understanding that they have a right to live in a the environment. They have a right to have clean water. So people are rising up and speaking for themselves. Gone are the days when people were not able to speak up because they didn't have this knowledge. Knowledge is increasing. We're having these sessions in school and educating children about climate change. So this keeps me hopeful through my worry. When I worry about the future, I look at the people, the young people that are rising up every day and speaking up and providing solutions. Like, we have activists who are planting trees. I'm planting trees in schools, in homes. We have activists who are installing solar panels in schools. Like, people are providing solutions already. So this keeps me hopeful. This keeps me calm a bit. But of course, the anxiety still, it has never left. It's always there. We've lived with it for a very long time.
What I'm hearing, though, is that you look at the spread of knowledge, the spread of education, the actual work being done that really helps you cope. Did you feel that you were heard when you attended COP27?
I actually feel like leaders are hearing what we are saying. They just want to listen. There's no willingness, but they're hearing this pressure from young people. So seeing that loss and damage was added on the agenda, it wasn't easy. At the beginning of COP, loss and damage was first removed off the agenda. Then they added it back on the sub-agenda. Then later it was added back. So it wasn't an easy journey. But this shows that there's actually pressure out there and the leaders are being pressurized by the youth. So they are hearing us. They just don't want to listen or they are not willing to act.
Hmm. We're reflecting on climate change and its impacts on the youth of the world. We have Evelyn Acham there from Uganda, Ashley Lashley in Barbados, Mitzi Jonel Tan from the Philippines. You can join along the way at 800-642-1234. Ashley, your foundation looks at the ways that climate change is already affecting human health. What are the biggest issues and how do you address those impacts that you see?
So essentially, firstly, the foundation is a youth-led. We look at youth engagement on like climate and health issues. Yeah. So what we're seeing is that as a result of different climatic changes, different health conditions are happening. For instance, due to air pollution, that has an impact on like asthmatics. So we're trying to bring awareness to that link. We're also seeing that when like extreme weather events occurs, that it also have an impact on countries' healthcare systems as well. So we're looking at ways to that we can advocate for more climate smart technologies within our hospitals and community health systems. So essentially what we do throughout the foundation on one of our projects is that of sensitization and awareness climate education to young persons to really highlight the link. I remember in Barbados, I was telling someone the other day that as a young person growing up, there's this condition, well, this disease called dengue, which is from an Aedes aegypti mosquito. And I couldn't understand why so many persons at home were getting this dengue disease in which we call it. And growing up, then I began to realize it's because of water settling in different locations after like when lots of rainfall. So we're seeing, we know that climate change does have a direct and indirect impact on persons' physical and mental health. And all we're trying to do is bring the necessary awareness to persons to show them that those links.
Just to follow up on something you said there, climate smart technologies. Can you give us an example of what a climate smart technology would be?
Yeah. So essentially, climate smart technologies, for example, let's go to the agricultural industry. You know that in some
countries, I can go back to my island, Barbados and Caribbean nations, we're at risk of having like effects of food security. So some climate smart technologies, would that be when it comes to the agriculture sector, an effective seed production and delivery system, biodiversity management, looking at different ways to simultaneously have a mixture of planting second seed crops. And those are just some examples of climate smart technologies in the agriculture sector. And I think a major one as well would be looking at different ways that we can improve our water usage and water management, and looking at sustainable soil and land management as well.
Water and food, those basic needs. Mitzi, how will people in the Philippines need to adapt as climate change progresses?
That's the problem, actually, because there's such a big lack of research, of support and funding for our research and development here in the Philippines. We don't even know what adaptation needs to look like per community that we have. For some communities, it will be building evacuation. The basic ones are basically building evacuation centers. They're built to be evacuation centers because right now when there are storms and typhoons, people evacuate into schools, churches, and gyms, which also flood and get destroyed because they're not built to be evacuation centers. So it's about making that climate resilient infrastructure. But then there's also other forms of adaptation like planting mangroves. Some of them are planting trees. Some of them are reclaiming land. But it depends per community. And the problem is that there is no research that's centered around people when we're talking about adaptation in the Philippines. And so that's a big thing that we need to look into. And funding from the Global North should be flowing into that, finding out and supporting the scientists here in the Philippines and across the world to ensure that every person and every community are able to adapt to the climate crisis as we fight for that drastic carbon dioxide emission cuts, which is so crucial if we want to be able to adapt at all.
So I'm hearing that there's a gap in human adaptation research that really needs to be more aggressively underway, in your view.
Yes, exactly. It's also understanding that it's not just the economic form of adaptation, but there's also adaptation that needs to be happening within communities. It's listening to women who are the first responders in communities and trying to figure out what the best way for the community is in order to adapt and respond to disasters.
We hear from this new generation of climate activists across the world. Mitzi Jonel Tan there from the Philippines, Ashley Lashley from Barbados, Evelyn Acham in Uganda. Still time to talk about the contributions young activists are making on climate change. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with three climate activists who all share this passion for action to aggressively reduce carbon emissions and give voice to marginalized nations that have been hit much harder than wealthy countries. Still time to discuss youth activism in the future. 800-642-1234. We have Mitzi Jonel Tan representing Manila, capital of the Philippines. Ashley Lashley of Barbados seeking to build bridges between youth in the Caribbean and around the world. And Evelyn Acham working on justice issues in Uganda. Evelyn, what solutions to the climate crisis do you see on the horizon that are being developed in Uganda?
I talked about earlier, like climate education in Uganda. One of the biggest problems we have is ignorance. People do not know what climate change is. I personally didn't know about climate change until 2019 when I started.
No, it doesn't make sense.
We're getting some interference here, Evelyn. I'm so sorry about that. But I also want you to bring up the tree project and the goals of planting millions of fruit trees.
Okay, thank you. So I feel like the biggest problem that we have in Uganda is, some of the solutions that we are doing in Uganda is educating people and communities about climate change. Then tree planting is a way to promote mitigation. So I'm doing the plus one tree, I'm planting the project which involves distribution and planting fruit trees in homes and in schools. And the target is to plant 9 million trees in Uganda because Uganda has an average of 9 million homes. So this is the project that I am doing currently. And I'm also collaborating with Girl on the Move project, which is headed by my fellow activists. And this project involves empowering young girls and women, especially young girls who have dropped out of school as a result of climate change, by providing vocational skills to them, like tailoring, like going back to school in case they're able to go back to school.
Helping those young girls and women get their educations. And Ashley, I want to turn to you because here in Wisconsin, a state in the United States might feel a world away from the work that you're doing, from the pressures that you're feeling. What would you tell Wisconsinites about how this hits home?
I would tell persons from Wisconsin that for us, as a small island developing nation, and for other many small island developing states who are at the forefront of the climate crisis, where every day we're seeing the dramatic changes to our environment, from the rising of our sea levels, from coastal erosion, from food security problems, and then from extreme weather events. Each and every day, we have to find different ways to adapt and mitigate better to the impact of the climate crisis. And that is why each and every one of us have a major role to play by doing small stuff, even when it comes down to planting trees. I know it's around Christmas time, persons can look at starting like those home gardening projects, investing more in clean energy by purchasing an electric vehicle or placing solar panels on your homes. There's small things that each and every one of us can do as it relates to finding our own solutions to really contribute to a clean and safe environment. And you know, there's this saying that goes, the youth are the future. So we really need to work together. And what I say, join hands, so that at the end of the day, we can work to ensure that future generations have an environment that is safe, healthy, and environmentally friendly.
I want to pause there a moment when you mentioned solar and other clean energy projects, because we heard from Mike in Shell Lake says that people really need to take a closer look at how we manufacture batteries for clean energy projects. And Mike says lithium mining can exploit child labor and devastate local environments. How green are batteries and what do we need to take into consideration?
Well, to be honest, I can't really answer that because I haven't done enough research into that topic. So I don't know if someone else on the call can answer that your question.
Sure. Mitzi, what is your sentiment there about the concerns about trying to fix the climate crisis through technology?
I think that carbon capture technology and fixing the climate crisis through technology right now is being used as a scapegoat to not stop polluting, to keep on polluting, especially by global north and rich countries. So we have to make sure that it's very clear that the way to solve the climate crisis now is to stop emitting more, to stop fossil fuel industries, to drastically cut down carbon dioxide emissions. And I think there is a space for technology at some point, but as long as it's being used as a scapegoat to keep polluting, especially now when it's not developed, when it's not 100%, when it's not clear, we shouldn't be gambling on the people's lives today.
When you hear, you know, about 40% of Americans remain unconcerned about climate change, that's according to Pew Research Center, what would you say to people who simply aren't worried about it?
I feel like people who aren't worried about the climate crisis probably don't know about it. And that is the flaw of our educational system today that doesn't teach and empower people about what's happening across the globe. Because if you read it and look at the facts, it is alarming and it is scary, especially because we know that people are already being impacted today. And I refuse to think that regular people across the world are selfish enough to ignore the millions of people being devastated by the climate crisis today. I think this is why raising awareness and talking about the climate crisis, really pinpointing who is behind the climate crisis, what is the system behind the climate crisis that's causing it, the imperialist profit-oriented system that keeps on prioritizing the fossil fuel industry and greed over the natural limits of the planet, over the natural resources that we have, over people's lives.
Evelyn, I want to turn to you because I remember how there was this conversation at COP27 about greenwashing and how even like the Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg boycotted the summit. It was the summit to you used as an opportunity for leaders and people in power to get attention? Or do you think that you saw hope in it, that it was productive?
Okay. For me personally, because I'm from the global south and we are already facing the climate crisis, we have no choice but to be at such events, whether it has polluters, whether there's greenwashing. These are the only opportunities we have to amplify our voices, because for years we are not being heard, we are not being listened to, and we have to use our platforms to be listen to. I feel like, yes, COP had a lot of polluters, it had a lot of greenwashing, but at the end of the day, we were able to achieve something. This is not because I'm supporting the polluters to be there or the greenwashers to be there. I don't like them. I don't like seeing them greenwashing and lying to people. But again, we have no choice but to be at these events and tell our stories and tell exactly what's happening to us and our demands.
Evelyn, Ashley, Mitzi, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mitzi Jonelle Tan is the convener and international spokesperson of Youth Advocates for Climate Action Philippines. Ashley Lashley, UNICEF youth advocate working in Barbados, founder of the Ashley Lashley Foundation. Evelyn Acham, climate justice activist from Uganda, where she is the national coordinator with the Rise Up movement. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.